Welcome, everybody, to A Galaxy Not So Far Away, a podcast from Mysterious Galaxy Bookstore. I'm Gary.
And I'm Rebecca.
And we are here with fellow booksellers, Nick.
Hi.
Victoria.
Hello.
And Matt.
Hello.
Hi, everybody. You guys, I'm excited. This is our first, like, actual real recording of this. We've been talking about doing this for weeks, and I have a lot of anxious energy right now. But I think it should be fun. How's everyone doing? Let's just do like a I don't want to call it a vibe check, but like, how's everyone doing right now?
Vibe check.
Hanging in there.
Yeah.
Definitely doing better, so I'm good.
It's been weird, like, working from home and doing like that thing.
So weird.
I've seen places in my house that I've never seen before.
That's incredible.
Oh.
I think I might need to hear more about this. This sounds like a story, Matt.
I mean, I'm recording in my daughter's room right now.
Oh.
Because it's got the precious. Comfy chair.
That's the important thing, honestly, is to, like, make sure you're comfortable. Because who knows how long we'll be sitting here right now.
Forever.
Hopefully not forever. So for our first episode, we wanted to talk about... I've been saying comfort reads, but we came up with the phrase rereadables. Is that a thing that people use, or was that, like, an us...
No, that was me.
Oh, I probably would say rereadables more than comfort reads.
See, I would say comfort reads more than rereadables. I don't think I've ever used that phrase before now.
Yeah, no, me neither. Although
for me, I have both.
It makes sense. Because these are not just like, because there are a lot of comfort reads that I have that I don't read that much. And then there are books that I reread all the time.
Yeah, that's
fair. That make you very uncomfortable?
I don't think they make me uncomfortable.
Oh, okay.
I typically get rid of those books real fast.
The uncomfortable
ones?
Oh,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. We can talk about uncomfortables on
That'll be a different one. I have a whole list of those.
Oh, my goodness. I would actually do some real thinking about, like, books that I've read that made me uncomfortable. But that's not what we're here for today.
No, today we are going to talk about rereadables, books that we cannot stop picking up and rereading. So what did everybody bring this week?
I think, how many of us, three of us, have Harry Potter on our list for things we reread a lot?
Yeah, I think
I do.
That's pretty universal.
Yeah, I think so too. Do you think, I mean, it's... probably a generational thing, right? Like, I don't think all my sisters, like, my youngest sisters are 10 years younger than me. I don't think they've read all the Harry Potter books. But I was picking them up as they came out and reread them over and over again.
That's what I did. And then I would reread the whole series. Like, if book 5 was coming out, I would go back to book 1 and read books 1 through 4 before book 5 came out. And so every time a new book came out, I did that.
Oh. See, I did... What I would do is I wouldn't read them in the lead up for the new one, but I would read the new one and then reread the series, including the new one.
Including the new
one.
Wow. Yeah. Well, so what I wanted to do is I was really bad at planning, like, my rereads before the new one came out. So when the new one came out, I had to read it first before I had to pass it on to, like, all my sisters and my mom and, like, everyone else. And so after I was done with it, that, like, day or two later, I'd give it to my sister, and then I'd just start from book one again.
See, we had, like a little Harry Potter nerd reading group when I was in elementary school, and so we would, like, all sit together and, like, out loud reread the previous book before...
That's beautiful.
...the other one, the, like, new one would come out, so we were all, like, on the same page, and then it was easier to come back and be like, oh my god, this happened and that happened, but it just happened like this in the other book, and...
Amazing. I didn't have, like, a book group kind of thing, but me and my, like, a lot of my family read all the books. So, like, I read with my uncle and my aunt and then my mom and my sister would all, like, pass the book around.
So, I know that several of you had Harry Potter as a reread, but which books specifically did you guys choose? Did we choose different books, or...
So
I always started with the first one.
Yeah, I never go back to 1 through 3.
Really?
I've been driving up to LA for like a year and listening to them on audiobooks again. And I just keep churning through 4 through 7 over and over again on my way up because it's super relaxing and I don't have to totally focus on it. So sure. I can still pay attention to the road, which I guess is important.
Why do you think you don't go back to 1 to 3?
I don't know. I mean, I was so young when I read those, and I love them. But I think part of it is the influence of the movies. Like, the tonal shift in the movies after 3 and the kind of pacing of them is just so different that I think that influenced how I look at the books.
Mm.
And even when you look at the books, like, I have them sitting on the shelf here next to me. 1 through 3, they're so small. And then you get to 4, and yeah. It's like 2.5 times as big. So they just feel more immersive. And that's what I really look for. And something that I want to reread is to be immersed in it.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I always go back to the first one because for me, it's... I almost say, I don't want this to sound like it's a dismissive thing, because I say this about a bunch of books, but like, it's like popcorn. I can just like, I have the audiobook on my phone, or like, I can pick it up and just blow through it in a couple days, and it's familiar and comfortable in a way that like a lot of things that I read aren't. And sometimes, and much like you're saying, Matt, like sometimes it's nice to be able to just like, have that comfortable thing that you don't even have to like completely tune into to still feel like you're immersing yourself in that world.
Well, what about you, Victoria? I know that you had it on your list as well. What are your thoughts?
I totally always start from book one, but it's not even my favorite book. My favorite book is book 3 and book 4.
Mm.
But for whatever reason, I always make it to book 5 and stop.
Interesting.
Reading them again.
I would definitely say that the last two are the ones that I've read the least.
Same.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. I mean, those are the two most action-packed.
Yeah. I think because I was rereading the whole series every time a new one came out, by the time the last book came out, I was like, okay, like, it's culminated. I'm done. Like, I don't want to say that I'm done with Harry Potter. I'll go back and watch those movies all the time. But the commitment for rereading the like last couple books is so much more intimidating now. Yeah. I think I have a hard time like making the time for that when there's so much else that I'm trying to get through as well.
But I love the conclusion. Like, that's where everything gets wrapped up. And
I know.
Just Matt is having so all offended. This storyline. I'm not offended, but you know, it makes me wonder, like, are you more of a New Hope kind of person where you like the beginning of things? Or do you like Return of the Jedi and having things come to a conclusion? Like, do you have that same relationship in other,
you know? I do. I don't like letting things go, I think. I like the possibility space being still open for, like, more room to play in. I think that's the thing that's nice about, like, Star Wars right now is, like, we're always going to get more Star Wars stories. But it sometimes there are a series of books, not just something like Harry Potter, but I was a big fan of the Robert Jordan Wheel of Time books as a kid. And there's, like, 14 of those. And... when Robert Jordan passed after the 11th one and Brandon Sanderson picked the series up, I never went back to it. And not because I don't think that Brandon Sanderson can't do a good job. It's just like,
it wasn't
I don't want it to be over. I don't want to say goodbye to those characters. And so it's easier for me to just be like, oh yeah, I just, you know, they're there for me. Maybe one day I'll feel ready to consume it. But for now, those characters can still be where I left them.
See, I feel like...
if that makes sense.
I feel like when it comes to Harry Potter, I'm very in the middle of, like, what you're saying, Gary, but also what Matt is saying, because book 5 is my favorite book. The one that I've reread the most, because I feel like there is a lot of, like, action and a lot of really dramatic plotline stuff starts building up there, in my opinion, and also, like... Luna gets introduced, and you get a lot of the characters that I really love, and so sure. it feels like that perfect, like, it's familiar and it's comfortable but also exciting, and if I don't pick up the next one, I can just sort of like pretend that this is, you know, the comfortable spot where everything is happening.
Yeah,
and I don't
get
have
that.
To let go.
See, I'm mad at book 5. I'm not a big fan of it just because of Sirius and everything I've read over why
I think that's
he
why it's
was
so
chosen
good.
To die.
Yeah.
But why he was chosen to die really irritates me and it irks me.
Yeah.
And I read somewhere that the reason Rowling kills Sirius is because she couldn't kill Arthur Weasley. And it's like, that's not for me a reason to kill someone off.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
Something a little more in depth to that.
As a former teenage boy, it is very hard for me to reread book 5 again, and I do it just because it's in between 4 and 6, but it is the one that makes me cringe so much, and you know, I read it as a teenage boy, and I understand those emotions, and part of me hates going back to them.
Yeah.
See, yeah, I deal with all of those emotions at my work at the middle school, and it's like, I don't want to read those emotions.
That's
I
fair,
deal with
yeah.
them at work.
That's the problem that I always had going back to that one. Like, I think that's one of my favorite movies because it's easier for me to just, like, spend the couple hours with it rather than spend the, like, couple days it would take me to read the book. And, like, I was an angsty teenage boy. I don't need to read about an angsty teenage boy. Like, I've been there.
Oh, I love that stuff. I love it so much.
I have such a hard time. Oh. I have such a hard time with it.
Me too.
Daniel Radcliffe's face in that movie. I can't.
I love the cringe.
It's tough.
Not so much the movies, but definitely the books. The hardest one for me to go back to is the last one, The Deathly Hallows. And the reason for that is there's just so much walking around in the woods.
Oh, yeah.
I'm okay with that.
I'm not.
I think that they do a really good job with the character stuff that happens regardless of the fact that there's not, like, a lot of plot.
Talk about moody characters in that one. You have Ron Weasley going, fine, you're a jerk, and I'm leaving.
He had his little temper tantrum.
Oh, he did. He totally did. So.
See, I haven't gone back to book 7 since my dad died, and I'm afraid to go back to book 7.
Yeah?
Just because of that scene at the end. I'm like, I don't know how I'll handle that.
That's tough.
Yeah, that'll be a bridge to cross eventually, but. Not for hopefully a while.
There'll be a bottle of wine with that.
Yeah.
There'll be a bottle.
It definitely does matter when you first read them and what's happened since then, like with what you want to reread and
absolutely.
How you relate to it. Like, this just, especially with something so, you know, foundational to so many people as Harry Potter, like, it's really interesting just seeing how people have changed. In their relationship to those books.
It's really any book that can do that. It's your frame of reference totally can change what you've read years before and like, wow, I see a new meaning in it, or it gives you a different feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And
Nick, you didn't have Harry Potter on your list. What are some things that you find yourself going back to a lot?
Anything Neil Gaiman.
Yeah.
I love Gaiman.
His story writing is just like even if you're just reading the book, just sitting down in front of an old storyteller and you're telling this nice, warm, milk and honey story. And I know there are quite a bit of people who either do or do not like him because he is more of a storyteller than an author. But his stories just really have a way of taking me out of where I am, even though a lot of them are set in kind of contemporary settings. But they have these almost going to Narnia feels where you're just opening the bland, nothing looking wardrobe and you find yourself in this new place.
They're otherworldly despite the fact that they're still in a contemporary
setting. Of course.
Things like Neverwhere or American Gods feel like somewhere else because this like mythic overlay that he's really good at.
And Neverwhere was my first book I ever read of his, his first fantasy book, and I was hooked since then. I've probably read that book 5 times now. It's wow. If I'm ever feeling really down, that is a book that usually can do a really good job of like setting me back.
That's awesome.
It's wonderful. And recently I've been listening to The City We Became? Yeah, The City We Became.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I am really getting in that story some similarities to Ocean at the End of the Lane. Really don't want to spoil it, but especially the villain, oh my god. In Ocean at the End of the Lane, there's this personification of like rot and old things. And in the book, it's given the face of a cute, very curvy, blonde-haired white woman named Ursula Montag. And she speaks with this kind of haughty voice because she thinks she's the biggest, baddest thing in town. yeah. Oh, she is totally one of those characters that you hate, and then when bad stuff happens to that person, you're like, yes, yes, and yes.
You just love to hate her.
Yes, that's a big awesome. A big reason why I also go back to Ocean the End of Lane is because I know what happens to that villain, that character, and it's good every time.
I really loved Ocean at the End of the Lane as being like, is that the only story he's written in a first person point of view? It feels very personal in a way that a lot of his other stuff
does. Oh, it is. It's because I don't know if you know the story behind it. It was originally supposed to be a little story that he was writing to his current wife, Amanda Palmer. And that short story, like, he just kept going with it and became a novella. And his publisher somehow, I forgot how, got their hands on it. Like, oh, no, we need to publish this. So
that's fascinating.
Yeah, he wrote it for Amanda. It was very personal. And on the... I don't think they still do on the new covers, maybe. But I know on the original covers, at least the hardbacks, the back of the book shows a pair of kids' legs. That's actually a picture of Neil Gaiman himself as a kid.
Oh, wow, that's precious.
See, I've always that's felt precious. Like kind of like controversial because like I've not read a lot of Neil Gaiman. I was telling Gary earlier that it made me super anxious because everyone is so into Neil Gaiman. They're like, he is like up on this like incredible like pedestal, and I'm like, I read Coraline a long time ago, and I read like the first quarter of American Gods before like I had to return to the library. And so I'm always
if you ever want to reborrow that, I got like 8 billion copies.
I'm always so intimidated, and like, you know, like being really into comics and stuff, like people also really love Neil Gaiman as a comic writer.
Yes.
And I'm just always intimidated. I'm like, I waited so long to read it. Now I'm like nervous.
Oh, and Coraline is another one of those books that I've read maybe 3 times. It's a relatively short read, especially because it's a middle grade book, but it's definitely one of them that, you know, kid or adult, you can find something in it, and it is still even scary for an adult.
It's unsettling.
It is. And
well, and that's the thing. That's the thing that I really liked about it, and why it's one of the only ones, the only one that I've read to completion, is a lot of his work, in my opinion, can be very like daunting because like I have ADD, and there's just so much happening, and so I really love that book because I love books that kind of they're made for a younger viewer, but are so transcendent of age that you can't help but going back to them.
I think Graveyard Book is really good for that same reason.
Oh, and that's
another great one. Written with a middle grade audience in mind, and yet is still doing a really good job of talking about like more adult themes and things.
Oh, growing up.
Especially because, yeah, absolutely.
Now, you had mentioned Becca... ADD. In Neil Gaiman, he is very much one of those writers. He will take little details and just totally blow them up and to make it just a part of the story, like the little details, how a food looks and tastes. So I can only imagine, you know, for someone with short attention spans, how probably like, oh, come on, that kind of stuff is.
Literally, like, reading American Gods, I just remember being like, I'm two pages in and we're still talking about the same thing that this guy's looking at. You, like, what is happening?
You were probably hating when he was talking about coin tricks.
Oh my God. Oh my, it was like forever. I remember I was sitting like in a Starbucks by my house and I was just like, dude, I've been reading this page for like 15 minutes trying to figure out what he's talking about.
Just gotta enjoy the journey, man.
Oh my God.
Just gotta go.
American Gods was my first Gaiman book, and that's because for Christmas, Nick got it for me. And I remember I was doing a trip to my grandma's with my dad, and I had nothing to do, and it was a 9-hour road trip. So I'm like, I'm gonna start reading. And by the time we were to my grandma's, I was like, nope, I love this book. It's mine now.
Amazing.
It is a great book. Definitely.
But he is very wordy in that book.
He's very wordy, period. But only as a proper Brit should.
But he's got a voice like More Milk and Honey. He can be wordy all he wants.
I agree.
I'll listen to him.
Yeah, I like listening to his audiobooks because he reads them himself. And it's like, they feel like campfire stories almost sometimes. Just like his delivery. Does anyone else have any other like big ones they want to bring up? I see Matt, you and Nick both have Ready Player One on your list right now.
That is...
Yeah, I mean... Sorry, go ahead.
Just for me, the big reason why I keep turning to that is because even though I'm only 33 and didn't really experience the 80s like my sister would have, because my sister and I are 12 years apart. Wow. So she really experienced being a teenager in the 80s. I was born in 86. Me not. But I guess because of a lot of hand-me-downs, from like VHS videos and video games from my sister, I did experience the 80s in my own way. And so that book really is a chance for me to, in a way, relive, but then also really experience a time period that I didn't really get to. I love all the references that I get or the ones I don't. They make me, gives me kind of like a short history lesson on them, or it really sparks an interest, I look them up, and I even get more enriched. Aside from the story, which is pretty much just Willy Wonka in a video game, the whole Willy Wonka contest. And I think that's why I've read probably Ready Player One at least 3 times now.
Yeah, I don't have the same nostalgia as you do for it, because I experienced less of the 80s than you, we'll just put it that way. But it is one that I've listened to 10, 12 times.
Wow.
I do love Will Wheaton's recordings of his books, because he does his other one too, Armada. But there is still an element of nostalgia for it when I go back to it, because it is just such a comforting type of story. Like you said, kind of Willy Wonka-ish, but it's just that being transported to somewhere else. I think Harry Potter is like that for me. And the other book I put on the list, which was Magician by Raymond Feist, which has a very, like, you get sucked into this world, and then there's another world that you get sucked into. And I think there's just something about, you know, being, especially now, being taken away from where you are. And
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, being dropped somewhere totally new, or in this case, not somewhere new, but being able to experience it over and over again. And just the last time I listened to Ready Player One was actually last week. And, you know, this whole post-apocalyptic world where everyone's kind of in their own virtual headspace rings a little bit different now, because we've all been existing on Zoom and Slack and all these virtual portals that take us to other people. And that's how we interact. And I was like, oh, you know, now this is a cautionary tale more so than it was. Great.
I remember really enjoying Ready Player One the first time I read it. But I think the thing, like both, like Matt, you were saying, not actually being someone who experienced the 80s in any real, like, tangential way, I did grow up with a lot of, like, the movies and the references and the things that they talk about in the course of that story. But I'm also so fascinated just with, like, the way that their technology has developed. Because we're at this point of, like, especially now, of, like, immersing ourselves into, like, communities that exist in virtual spaces. And the idea of something like the Oasis and infinite introversial space that you can access and communicate within and move about within is fascinating and also like daunting in a way.
I really wanted it to be real though. Man, that sounded real good last week.
Uh-huh. I agree with you.
It possibly could be real now if this thing doesn't get over with, but that'd be so funny if that is the real premise and how Ready Player One started. It wasn't depleting natural resources and world hunger. It was,
a virus.
We're all afraid to go outside and there's a virus out there, so
we need to avoid human contact. Let's contact each other this way.
Yeah. See, that...
Wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, God. Someone's probably writing the book now for it.
Oh, of course. Yep. Of course. 100%.
I mean, what else are they going to do? They're trapped at home.
I mean, 2021.
Ugh.
All right, so I think so far there's been a lot of these, like, alternative realities and, you know, portal worlds.
Yeah.
But I know Becca has one on hers that I don't think really fits into that so much.
I assume...
Becca, tell me about your picks.
I assume that we're talking about Slaughterhouse-5.
I am.
By Kurt Vonnegut. I really love this book. I think that it is very world immersive, but not in a, like, portal type of sense, because it is based on a lot of true events. I really love rereading this book. One, because it's just absolutely insane to read. It goes in and out of different time periods, out of reality, like, page by page sometimes, especially as you get further in. You can either interpret it as this, like, fantastical science fiction story about a man that's gone to war and then he's traveling through time, or you can sort of take it as a semi-autobiographical book, because a lot of the stuff in there is from when Vonnegut was a POW in World War II.
Mm.
So, like, there's really haunting stuff in there, and... So let me back up a little bit. Basically, the premise is about the main character, I believe his name is Bobby, and he goes off to World War II and is a prisoner of war, and when he comes back, he's like, he starts sort of like, it almost feels like watching PTSD happen to a character, because one second he's in a bookstore looking at something, and then the next he's like, in the meat lockers, like, watching somebody get killed. And then there's, like, scenes with, like, alien abduction happening. So, it is very all over the place. I've probably read it 9 times.
Wow.
I should read this one. I have not, and this is fascinating.
I picked it up in 9th grade.
This was not a book that I came away feeling happy having read, like, I felt like it was important to read because Vonnegut's a great writer and I love a lot of his works. But, you know, most of the books that I reread at some point make me feel happy. I wouldn't describe this as a book that made me feel happy.
Yeah.
See, this seems like it'd be a book that would end up on my did not make me feel good pile. It needs to go away.
Well, it's actually funny you say that, because the two books I brought is this one and then The Tea Dragon Society by Katie O'Neill, which is a much different, like, it is a very happy, comforting read for me, but this book, like, it kind of makes me shake my head and laugh, because there's things in it that are so absurd and so out of place page by page that, like, I mean, I almost have to reread it sometimes to try and remember what is happening.
Sure.
So is it the layers to it? Because I kind of have that relationship with Kafka's, Metamorphosis.
Oh, absolutely.
Doesn't make me happy, but I love rereading it just because it's so, you know, one of those books where you read it and you have a different relationship to it every time and pick up on new things.
Yeah, I feel that way about most of Vonnegut's work. Like, Cat's Cradle, for instance, is another book of his that I really love that is so messed up, and not a lot of his books make me feel good, but they're very compelling and they make me think a lot. And that always, like, brings me back, especially if I try to talk to somebody about it. And I'm like, you know, I have to go try to remember what actually happened in this.
Yeah. There's an element of, like, oh, this story was saying something.
Yeah, well, one of my favorite parts, and I actually, like, made a note about this to bring up, is every time that he brings up the death of a character, he always follows it up by saying, so it goes. And it's really cool because, in a way, it, to me, it always communicated, like, you know, in war, you kind of just have to, like, pull yourself up by the bootstraps and, like, sort of desensitize yourself. But a lot of people also interpret it as, like, a head count throughout the book.
Oh.
And so there's just, like, it's weird that I don't find myself attached to Neil Gaiman because I feel that Vonnegut does have a lot of teeny tiny details that he repeats and, like, emphasizes like that that I'm very interested in.
Sure.
I think you would really like a book called The Third Policeman by Flann O'Brien.
You're going to have to message me this.
I will do that, but I think you would really like it, just based off everything you've said now.
Okay.
give us a short pitch for this book, please.
Yes.
Oh, man. I cannot do it justice.
That's
fair. I'm already excited. Place in
hell. I don't know.
Okay.
It's just an absurd book from an Irish author. And you just have to experience in a similar way with Kurt Vonnegut, right?
I love absurdism in books. Like, it feels almost like my ADD plays into the fact that it's so hard to tell what's going on. Like, I feel this.
So it's almost like you can just keep up with it.
Yeah.
Because it's so sporadic. And
I find a great sense of comfort in the fact that nobody else that's reading it knows what's happening 100% of the time.
So incredible. I'll give you a brief plot summary. I had to look it up from somewhere else just because I would not do it justice.
That's fair.
So this is Wikipedia. It starts in rural Ireland, and the narrator is a scholar who's dedicated to the works of a fictional scientist and philosopher named De Selby. And so it's kind of his obsession with it, and he's trying to work everything into the lens of De Selby's philosophy. And then it just goes off the rails there, but, you know, you kind of get into the philosophy part of it, and there's all these weird characters. Like, there are some who are obsessed with bicycles, and so it goes into bicycles for a while, but it's very, like, philosophical in the same way that Vonnegut is.
And what's it called?
The Third Policeman.
Okay, I'm adding it to my to-be-read pile.
Nice. Yeah, I don't want to get into, like, even more complicated narrative, but have any of you guys read House of Leaves by Danny Lusky?
Oh, God.
Mark Danny Lusky.
That's a very much to-be-read pile when I have the energy for it. I leave through
that's
it.
One same. I had a lot of time. I was working at a job where I was at, like, a front desk position, and I had a lot of time during the day to read. But that is very much one that is, like, stories within stories within stories. And it is absurd, and one of the actual, like, sentence structure of the book starts to break down in the latter half, where you have, like, footnotes that go backwards on pages and passages that you have to read with a mirror, and
that sounds, like, amazing.
It's incredible. Wow. But it is also, like, here's some homework. It's hard.
It definitely sounds like something to read when you have a lot of energy.
Yeah, absolutely. I had also, just, like, because the whole thing, like, it's about the sort of, like, fraying, I think even, like, the character's psychological state is sort of coming untethered by the end of the book in, like, each layer of the story. And so very much, like, that is reflected on how the sentence structure is reflected on the page. I don't really remember how it ended. It just falls apart in an interesting way. I love it. I love it so much.
Is that one you would reread?
I've reread it twice because
it's hard to recommend. I don't know. I would not put it on my rereads of, like, here's something I go back to and take comfort in. But it is one that, because I like puzzles. And I like pulling at those threads and those tethers and trying to find those, like, those pieces that tie it back together. So I read it twice. And I feel like I definitely got more out of it a second time. But I don't know if I would ever go back and do it a third.
Yeah, my understanding, that book is kind of like those, Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared videos that you kind of have to kind of like reread it just to understand, or like, oh, like to actually get the kind of like the hidden Easter eggs in there, if that were.
There's so much.
Yeah.
There's so much. There's like letters to the main character from his mother who's in a psych ward, and if you circle all of the capitalizations in her letter, it's a totally different message within the first met. Like, it's
wow.
There's a lot. It's a lot. I think he originally published it in, like, passages on the internet.
Sheesh.
Yeah. Not much of a comfort read, but I enjoy that one. Victoria, tell me about Sherilyn Kenyon. Sherilyn Kenyon's on your list, and I've not read any of her stuff.
I love her. I love her. She writes mainly urban fantasy romance. All of her books also tie into, well, most of her books tie into some sort of either Greek or Roman Egyptian mythology. So there's a whole bunch of gods and stuff, and there's some Native American stuff going on too. And what I like about her books is it's not romance driven, it's actually like plot driven. So there's a story, it just happens to have romance in it.
Got it.
I like that.
And she's not afraid to touch on, like, how do I say this? It's not like the cookie cutter romance. It's not Ken and Barbie in every book, which I really like, because not every person is either Ken or Barbie.
When you say that, do you mean like as far as like, is there, you know, they're different, like, body types, not, and races, yes, and stuff like that?
Yes. They're not all tall, skinny blondes with big, muscular, beefy men. Most of the men are big and beefy, but they're not like Kens.
Gotcha.
If that makes sense.
No, it does.
But she's really, really good, and they're quick reads. I've probably read the first three in her series, oh, I don't know, 20 times.
Wow.
Wow. Amazing. She's super prolific, right? She's got like a bunch of stuff.
She does. She has, I want to say, three series. They're like, I think collectively, like 30 long.
Wow.
So they're really good. And I have multiple I'm like weird. I have multiple copies of them because I'll lend them out and then I'll want to read them. And so then I'll just go buy it.
Amazing. Incredible.
That's dedication.
Yep. She has all my money. It's okay.
When I was in high school, I could read series like that where it was like, you know, dozens or more books long. But I just don't have the energy for that anymore, I don't think.
I don't want to, like, call myself out, but, like, when it comes to reading romance, I usually just stick to, like, fanfic.
That's fair, though.
Because it's short and sweet and, like, it scratches the itch and then I can just move on.
Fanfic is valid. I think
that counts. There's nothing wrong with reading fanfic.
You know what? Now that they're making, like, archive of our own, like, stories into, like, short films and stuff, I feel much more validated.
They're making Wattpad novels into actually published books. I'm pretty sure we're all good at reading.
Archive of our own win, like, a Hugo or something?
Yeah, which is insane, because I don't know if you guys know this, but that website has been the beta website for, like,
wow,
8 years, I think.
Amazing.
I feel like if anyone is listening to this and they're like a big fact checker, they're going to call me out because I don't think that's right. But it's been like that for a long time.
Yeah. That's so funny.
All right. So I've got a closing question, or at least a question for everybody.
Yeah.
Now that we've had time to think on this. What would the one book you would... What one book would you bring with you if you were stranded on a desert island?
Oh.
Which I think is different than just like casually picking up any book in your house and choosing it to reread again. Because this is the one book that you're going to be rereading forever.
For the rest of time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think there's, on the one hand, the comfort angle, and then on the other hand, there's the kind of complexity, puzzle, layer, richness angle, which they're not necessarily exclusive, but I think that, you know, they're a little different.
So I actually know mine, because it's the other book that I was bringing to this recording and just didn't get to talk about. The Tea Dragon Society, it was written and illustrated by Katie O'Neill. I believe it was her debut book. I would take this book with me anywhere. It's literally sitting in front of me. I mean, like, one, it's visually stunning. The, like, color palette is super soothing. The characters are beautifully constructed. It's won two Eisners. It's got, like, queer characters. But also, on a more serious note, like, I've had literal panic attacks and had my partner, like, hand me this book and it, like, calms me down. And I think if I was on, like, a deserted island, precious. I would, like, want a beautiful book that I could just look at and be like, everything's gonna be okay.
I think that's fantastic logic.
Yeah. I think for a very similar reason, The Phantom Tollbooth would probably be the one that I'll pick.
Huh.
By Norton Juster. Because it's the first book that I read that really played with wordplay in a really, like, playful and witty sort of way. And made me really, like, fall in love with language in a weird... I don't know if anyone knows this one. It's a kid who he gets a package when he gets home from school one day, and it's just like a little car and a toll booth, and he drives to the toll booth and he ends up in like another world, and he has to like save the princesses. I believe they're called Rhyme and Reason, to like help save the plight that this world is in. And there's like Digitopolis with it, which is led by, I don't remember what the leader of the mathematician, I think, is the leader of that world. And then there's a literary, I don't remember what their society is called. But it's very, like, playful and whimsical. There's, like, an island called Conclusions. You can only get there by jumping. Like, it's just silly and lighthearted in a way that I really like.
I really love that book, except I know it as a children's play from when I used to do theater.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah, that's why I was so excited when you said it. I was like, I know this.
Yeah, I love The Phantom Tollbooth so much. I found it in, like, elementary school and just fell in love with it completely.
That was definitely one of the first novels that I read.
Yeah. I really like it a lot. It captures a voice that I don't think I've read in anything else, of just like, I don't want to say lightheartedness, because it has its moments, you know, but it's witty in a way that I really like.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic reason, and I would probably choose a book for a similar reason. Joyce's Ulysses, I think, would be the book that I would want to read over and over again, because similarly, like, there's so much wordplay and all the kind of layers of things that are built into the story. I would like to have an encyclopedia or something so that I can understand more, or they make a lot of good companion books for it to help you read it. But if I can't have the companion book, which probably by my own rules I can't, I would choose either Harry Potter 7. Yeah, it's just so comforting. And like Becca said, comfort is going to be the name of the game stranded on the desert island.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't want, like, Slaughterhouse 5. Like, I don't think that I want something that's going to, like, keep me up at night.
No, please, no. Yeah, I wouldn't, you know, a lot of the stuff I read, because I'm a big fan of epic fantasy, is parts of series, but it's really hard to be like, oh, hey, I want book one of this series that I like, and I'm never going to read the end. Nick, Victoria, do you guys have...
You bet.
Okay, gosh, I'm really torn between two, and it's, like, to the point where, bullet to the head, I don't know, honestly, which one I would take, so... I'm going to grab whichever one of the two I have to grab before I'm tossed on a boat and taken to the Great. Desert island. It would either be, and they're both by Shailen Kenyon, surprise, surprise. it would either be Dance with the Devil, which is Zarik's story. And the reason I love that one so much is because he is kind of, I hate comparing people to animals because it's mean, but he's like a dog that snaps and you can't figure out why. Aww. And it's because he's been abused so much, he knows nothing but to snap. Aww. So he snaps to protect himself. And I really just love that it shows that people don't always react in a violent way because they're mean and aggressive and an asshole, even though he is an asshole. there's a reason for it. And then I would either do that one or Night Play, which to this day is the first book I've read where the main character is a bigger woman. Sherilyn describes her as a size 18.
Oh, I love and that.
To just blatantly say, oh, she's not curvy. She's a bigger woman and she's got, you know, she's got curves and she's not a size 4.
Yeah.
And I read this book before my husband and I got together. And then I read it again after we got together. And I'm like, holy shit, I married the main guy in this book.
Amazing.
And then I gave it to my husband. And I said, you need to read this book because the main character reminds me of you. And so that book is very, so if I'm going to be by myself on this island, I would want that book because it reminds me of my husband.
That's precious.
That is such a good answer. And also now I have to read this book.
No.
I will totally loan you a copy. I have, I think, 3 of them.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Great.
I wasn't kidding when I said I buy multiple of these books because they get beat up and I need a new one.
Also, Gary, please don't add this into the episode, but Victoria, if you could please bring that, like, angry, snapping dog type of description to the brooding villains thing. Like, I know he's
so not a villain, my number one. But see, the Perfect. Thing is, he's not a villain in his book. He's kind of a villain-ish in the book before that, so I think I can twist it. I got a few brooding, snapping men in these books that I'm going to bring.
Just because, like, when you were like, well, like, he's bad, but, like, he's not bad. Like, I just saw, like, Kylo Ren and Loki in my head, and I was like, I know exactly what you're talking about.
So
amazing.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, side convo over. I just had to say something.
So, Nick, what's your your number
one? Obviously, tough question. If I were to break rank and go for a graphic novel, I'm going to cheat a little bit. There's actually a wonderful graphic novel. It's on my also reread list, but I just didn't think of actually discussing it until now. It's called The Less Than Epic Adventure of TJ and Amal. And it is a wonderful, heartfelt, also at some points risque story about TJ and Amal, a gay love story about these two men who just randomly meet. And for various reasons, both men have to travel cross country. And so they just get in a car and don't know each other. And they just drive across the country, learn about themselves, about the things they pass by and about each other and who they ultimately want to be. So it's really one of those stories that has spoken to me. And the visuals, even though they're just pen and pencil drawings, they're completely wonderful. The artist did a great job.
That's amazing.
Nick, I'm, like, emotional that you brought this, because I remember when it was a webcomic, and I saw it at a Comic-Con, and I literally cried when I saw it, because I was like, I can't believe this is a real, like, physical book now.
Oh, no, I had to buy it the minute I saw it at Comic-Con.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's so beautiful, and it's so well done.
It is.
That's awesome.
But if I were to choose a novel, I would go for, of course, Neil Gaiman, Neverwhere. Yeah. Again, the reason behind it is because even though it's relatively a short book compared to a lot of some of the other ones that were brought up, the villains, Mr. Krupp and Mr. Vandermeer, they're so delightful and strange that they really read to me. You have Fallen Angels, you have Pieces of London that are like in this area called London Below, you have basically Joe Everyman, I forget his name, I think it's Richard Mayhew, I believe. He's just totally just lost in all of this, and he just wants to get back home to his regular life, and all of this is experiencing. I really, really love it.
That's awesome. I need to reread that one. It's been a while, but that was also one of the first Neil Gaimans that I read.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if that's everything we have for this one, I think I am going to mention, because it did come up in that aside earlier, Becca, that the next one we're going to talk about is going to be Broody Villains, which I'm very excited to talk about.
I'm so excited.
I'm worried we're not going to have enough, like, book characters as opposed to, like, movie or TV show ones, but we'll worry about all of mine are book.
That's good.
I tried to make sure at least one of mine was a book character.
I told Gary straight up, I was like, we might have to, like, do a disclaimer at the beginning of the episode and be like, no minors listen to this one, please, because I'm about to get extremely emotional about these bad men.
It'll be fun. So that'll be next week. Before we get there, do you guys have anything? What are you guys reading right now? I'm curious about, like, what people's, like, to be read piles are for the next, like, week or so.
I'm currently reading, Last Girls by Dimitra Brodsky, and my god, I'm going to shove this book down people's throats because you guys will know how much I love Grey Bastards, but I might love this book a little bit more than Grey Bastards.
That's probably right
neck and neck. Like,
that's huge.
And then after that, I have some romance rereads I'm going to do because I need some happy feels since I've been stuck in my house for like 3 weeks.
That makes sense.
And I'm going crazy.
Currently, I'm listening to N.K. Jemisin's The City We Became.
Yes.
And I previously mentioned it reminded me of a Neil Gaiman story, but it's so on its own. It's like a love story about New York City and the people in it, while also having all this fantastical things happen. The narrator for it is also putting their own spin on it. Some of the things, the parts they're reading are almost being read in kind of like a rap jam, or what are those poet jam things they had? What are they called?
Like slam poetry?
Yeah, there's almost some moments like the narrator's like having a slam poetry with what she's reading.
That's fascinating.
I know, so it's really giving me a different kind of viewpoint on what I'm listening to, aside from I know how I would probably be reading it myself. And then in the queue, I'll be reading Tamsin Muir's Harrow the Ninth. The sequel to Gideon the Ninth, and I'm very excited for this one.
Gideon has been on my pile since that book
came out.
Oh, it is
so
very guilty
good.
About it.
I know.
It's one of those that you just love the main character because she's a badass, and she's kind of the underdog, and you just love her for being her.
That's awesome. I'm on a big Star Wars kick right now. So I just finished Alphabet Squadron last week. I am a couple hours from the end of the audiobook for Ray Carson's novelization of The Rise of Skywalker, and I am currently reading the advanced copy of Queen's Peril, the Padme Amidala story coming out in June.
Wow.
And it's great. It's all great. I love Star Wars so much.
Did you get, like, a hard copy of that?
We got a physical copy of the ARC, like, right before the store closed.
Wow.
Is there any way Scott can borrow that? I'm totally going to ask on this because I don't care, but...
Yes, but Kylie has first dibs on it after...
Oh, no. After Kylie, probably
yeah,
after
absolutely.
Darcy.
We'll pass it
around. After the right lists.
It's very good. it's young Padme right when she becomes Queen Amidala and how she's, like, navigating, setting up her court and stuff. It's awesome.
That sounds so good.
That's amazing. And her other one, Queen Shadow, is so good.
Queen Shadow's also very good. She also wrote the Ahsoka book, which is also very good.
Scott loves that one.
It's great. I love Ahsoka Tano so much. I don't want to talk too much about Star Wars, but Star Wars Clone Wars Season 7 is happening, and Ahsoka Tano is back, and it's great! It's great. Becca, Matt, what are you guys reading?
Okay, I'll go.
I was like, I'm going to wait. I'm holding out.
Don't test my patience.
Oh, we'll sit here in silence, Matt.
I've been really struggling with attention span lately because everything.
I understand.
But I think I've settled on The Last Wish, which is the first book in the Witcher series.
It's very good.
And I've been re-listening to Harry Potter 7.
Nice. That comfort read right there. There you go.
All day.
Amazing. Perfect. Last Wish was really fun. I didn't read the Witcher books until after I watched the show, so I was very delighted that the first two short story collections are very much the stories taken from Last Wish and from Sword of Destiny. They're both very fun. I like them a lot. What about you, Becca?
So I am also forever struggling with attention span. And I've been caught in this loop of either I pick up a book and I complete the whole thing in one sitting, or I read the first chapter and I stop. So I am going back to Mongrels by Stephen Graham Jones. It is a horror novel set on a reservation. And I mean, I just feel like there's not enough native-based horror, and as someone that is half native and loves horror, I think that that's, like, I want more, so I'm super excited to get into that. But otherwise, I am tonight, after this, about to start Hostage by Guy Delisle. It is it's a graphic novel based on a true story about a man that was kidnapped and held hostage, and 90% of this graphic novel takes place in one room. So I'm extremely excited to read it. My partner has been pushing it at me forever, and I was like, you know what? This feels like an ironic read right now, since...
Yeah, it sounds very tense for someone who can't leave their house to be reading.
Well, you know.
A story that takes place in one room.
But yeah, I'm really stoked. It's super celebrated, and I mean, Guy Delisle is an excellent creator, so I can't wait.
You'll have to let me know how that one goes.
Oh, I will.
Awesome. All right. Thank you, everybody, for being here to talk about our rereadables, our books that we go back to all the time. Like I said, we'll be back next week with Hot Broody Villains, I think is what we came up with the title for that one. So, very excited for that. If you have any questions, you can send us questions at podcast@mistgalaxy.com. That's mystgalaxy.com. You can also find us at, I think it's Mist Galaxy Books on Twitter and on Instagram. Does anyone know if that's right off the top of my head?
That is correct.
Let me look.
I think it's Mist Galaxy Books. Yeah, so you can find us there or check out our website, mystgalaxy.com. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.